everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the Roost Podcast. As always, I am Carter Spires, here with my co-host Matthew Bartlett, the owner and managing editor of AtTheRoost.com, your premier source for Rice sports news. Well, coming off a week. Yeah. You know, you sometimes gotta get through it and move on. But before we get to Texas, we'll do a little housekeeping stuff as always, and then talk around some CUSA scores, and then move into Texas and Baylor. So,
yeah, start out with thank you for everybody who has found us and listened to us. We appreciate all your support. Just wanted to put a note out there that you can find us anywhere that you listen to your podcast: iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn, Google Play. I'm sure there's something else thrown in there. So make sure you give us a check on any of those. And then please, if you could give us a positive review and tell us what you like, or, you know, if you have any feedback for us, you can always reach out to us and let us know. And then also right now, if you are interested, you can go and hit up the Roost shop, and we're giving away 10% discount for all listeners of the podcast. Just use the code RICEFIGHT. And on that, those are some housekeeping things, and we can jump forward into some Conference USA, a couple of games that I think will be interested, or at least worth following for Rice fans. We can start off with Army played UTSA in San Antonio on Saturday, and it was a little bit close at the beginning, and then Army just kind of ran away from them, 131-13. So that's the same team that took Michigan to overtime and beat another CUSA team now by 3 touchdowns. So I know we're going to get into the Texas game and what we thought about that, but I think that alone in a vacuum should give Rice fans some optimism.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the results that Rice's opponents have had so far, and, you know, again, we're just going to keep... There's not a lot to say other than keep coming back to these quote unquote moral victories. But like, Army, after an extremely close game at home against Rice, took Michigan to overtime, has now had a pretty resounding victory against one of Rice's fellow CUSA West teams. Wake Forest is now 3-0, beat a North Carolina team that had wins against Miami and South Carolina in the first 2 weeks. And then Texas is obviously Texas. So
maybe the non-conference slate is as difficult or even more challenging than we thought it was at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, for sure. I think Wake in particular is a team that I don't know if everyone expected them to be this good. But not that any of you needed reminding, but this schedule has been really, really hard. So as we continue to try and preach patience here, I guess, in terms of the results, the not only Rice's results, but the other games that the teams on their schedule have played should continue to reinforce that, let's say.
Yeah, and there's a couple other pieces I wanted to hit on some of the conference games. You know, as people are trying to get their thumb on Rice and how good the Owls are, there's a couple results from this weekend that were notable. North Texas lost to Cal on the road. That was a game that I think Cal was up 20-3 or something at some point, and North Texas came back but fell short 23-17. So Mason Fine has been pretty good, but that's been up and down for them. And then two other results: Marshall beat Ohio 33-31, and that's coming off a loss that they had at Boise State where they only scored a touchdown for the entire length of the game. So that was interesting to see them bounce back. And then Quez Watkins, receiver for Southern Miss, was back and made his season debut and went off for 200 yards receiving and 2 touchdowns. Their secondary receiver also had 180 yards receiving. So almost to 400 yards receiving between two receivers, and they won a shootout 47-42. Over a pretty good Troy team that was expected to have a pretty good defense. So we just saw a really, really good offense against Texas this past weekend, and it's looking like Rice is going to have a couple more of them. They won't hopefully not see a quarterback quite as good as Sam Ellinger. I don't think we will, but there will be some teams on the conference slate that are going to be able to put up some points.
And speaking of Texas,
do we have to?
You know, the thing I'll say is this. We're not going to dwell on this one too long because, I don't know, there's only so much you can say, right? My big takeaway from this one is that I don't think there's anything you take away differently about this team. You know, we've been preaching, you know, as frustrating as the start it has been and is going to continue to be because, you know, it just doesn't let up. We're going to talk about Baylor in a second, and then they open CUSA play with a pretty good Louisiana Tech team. So things aren't going to be letting up anytime soon. But, you know, all the things we've said so far about how impressive the Rice defense has looked and how, you know, we see some positives here and there on the offense. All that still applies going forward. You know, certainly you have to think about the fact that even though he had the full week of practice, this was still Rice coming in with a backup quarterback. There were still several injuries that they had during the game. I haven't heard any updates. I don't think any of those injuries coming out of yesterday were expected to be serious. Have you heard anything on those?
You know, and we're recording this before it's going to drop on Wednesday. So I'm sure if I had any notes to share, they would be defunct by the time we got to Wednesday when this drops. So as of right now, days after the game, I haven't heard anything one way or another that's too serious, but I'm sure we'll have answers to those by the press conference on Tuesday. So follow along. We'll everything as we get it, we'll put up on the site. So hopefully nothing looked too serious, like you said, Carter, but we just don't know.
But regardless, my point stands. I think that everything that we've felt positively about this team over the first couple weeks still applies. This was just, you know, a Texas team that is, in terms of the quality of talent they have on their roster, is one of the top 6, 7, 8, top 10 at the outside most talented teams in the country. You know, if you look at any measure of that, whether it's the 24/7 sports, I think they have a team talent composite that's based on their recruiting rankings. And then Bud Elliott over at the Banner Society does his blue chip ratio every year, which Texas is solidly on. So, you know, we questioned whether they would have proper motivation coming into this game. They certainly did. So credit to Tom Herman and his staff for getting them ready to play after a big, big loss against LSU. So,
yeah. And I mean, so this is the best part and the worst part about being a sports fan, right? Especially a Rice football fan, is you live and die with your team and the games. And it was rough on Saturday. But if we take a step back and go into our time machine back to August 30th before we kick off against Army, and someone would have told you, okay, Rice goes 0-3 in their first three games, but they're at a one-score game with Army driving with the ball. They are within two scores against Wake Forest in the third quarter going to the fourth quarter. And they're, what, a field goal away from covering your spread against Texas, who coming into the season was a top 10 team. That's fantastic. Like, this team won two games last year and had a lot of promise, but not a lot of consistency. And what we've seen so far, yes, the Texas game was very inconsistent from where they've been, but, you know, if we're charting the roadmap of the expectation and where we want the team to be through non-conference play, like, I'm happy with the start. I know the coaches wish they could have gotten some wins out of there, and the players do too, and they're not happy, but, you know, gauging expectations appropriately, like, if you take your out of the moment that stings and you look at the big picture, like, Rice is doing pretty well.
Right. And you just keep in mind the trajectory of where Rice is. You know, we're three games into the first full year. You know, I keep hammering home how much of last year was a year zero type of thing with all the turnover and the scheme changes and everything. You know, this is the first kind of proper year of this era, and you're three games in, having played what I think you can fairly call one of the harder schedules in the country to this point. And that's certainly going to keep up with a pretty good Baylor team coming to town. So, you know, you think we've stayed away from record projections on this podcast so far. But, you know, if you had told me before the season that Rice was going to win one of these first three games, I would have thought it was insane. So it's not as though Rice is in any worse place than we expected it to be. And then in terms of, you know, like you were saying, where the scores were at and the quality of play that we've seen, I think they're pretty far ahead of what we expected or maybe thought they might be. So
Yeah, absolutely. And you're still talking about they're more mature and experienced than they were last year because so many true freshmen played. But if you look at some of the breakdowns that happened, you know, on both sides of the ball against Texas, you had some relatively young guys that were playing in the biggest games of their career. Like I was really excited to see Jake Bailey get out on the field and have his first shot at a reception. And he got a ball downfield from Stewart that hit him in the hands and wasn't able to reel it in. And we had Andrew Bird had a tough game tackling out on the edge. I think he had a long touchdown run that he just got stiff-armed by one of the Texas running backs. That was pretty rough. And those are things these are guys that have played, what, 2, 3, 4, 5 college football games, going up against blue chippers across the board. And a lot of them didn't have their best days. And I think,
and keep in mind with Andrew in the tackling, like he had some issues on that end. Certainly I saw he did make a couple of pretty good ones one-on-one, but also keep in mind that Andrew is 177 pounds and he's going up some of these guys from Texas that are in the, you know, 215, 220 range. So that's going to be a struggle for anyone with that kind of weight differential.
Yeah. And I didn't want to like single him or anyone out.
Right.
Because
right.
For the most part, there weren't that many like breakaway plays. Rice made Texas work for their points. Texas was able to move the ball down the field pretty well, but it wasn't 20, 30 yard chunk plays, play after play after play.
Yeah. I mean, like Texas played a great game. This wasn't one of those things where it was, you know, Texas was sloppy and Rice played poorly and, you know, the talent differential just won. I mean, the talent differential did win out, but Texas was very sharp. Like they worked for those yards and earned them.
Yeah. Sam Ellinger had 4 incompletions and 3 touchdown passes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's going to be difficult sometimes when you're throwing against air. So credit to him and credit to those guys. And, you know, if you're looking for some positives here, like, so Rice had only 1 sack, which is more than last week, at least.
But more than they had coming in for the season.
But they did have 8 tackles for loss, including a whopping 4.5 by Blaze Aldridge alone. So I think you saw, I've been a little frustrated at times so far with, in terms of the defense, because what they want this to be is a defense that can play man coverage on the outside and lock receivers down in one-on-one coverage. And that allows them to bring a lot of pressure, a lot of sort of exotic blitzes and do a lot of different things up front. And it's been a struggle at times this season to, you know, they're bringing those guys, they're bringing 5-6 guys against the run and rushing the passer, and they haven't always gotten home. But in that getting those 8 tackles for loss, I think you saw the prototype of what this defense wants to be. You saw that's playing pretty good coverage on the outside and that is getting a lot of really disruptive plays up front. And when they're in a situation later on in the year when the quarterback is not, you know, one of the best guys in the country and the receivers aren't, you know, these athletic 5-star freak type guys, the results are going to look a lot better because, you know, the receivers aren't going to be free and the offensive lines aren't going to be as good. So they're going to have more success in getting to the quarterback and getting to runners behind the line of scrimmage. So I think you saw the shape of what this defense can be at times in getting all those tackles for loss. It's going to be a while, a couple years probably before they've turned over the roster and built enough in these schemes for that kind of thing to really show a lot of success against a team like Texas.
Yeah. I mean, in overall, and I think what particularly, you know, first quarter in beginning of the second, what I was really impressed by the play of the interior of the defensive line, Texas was able to get, and especially when, you know, folks got a bit worn down later in the game, they were able to pull off some 10, 12, something yard runs, things like that. But there weren't very many chunk plays. And for the most part, Rice was able to, especially early on, get Texas into third and long. which is what you want to do. They weren't able to get off the field on third and long. And that was ultimately, you know, what led to the touchdown drives and got the ball rolling in the wrong way. But I was really impressed with, as much as they weren't able to ultimately get to the quarterback till the fourth quarter, they were able to do enough inside to force Texas to have to throw the ball and do it in negative situations where you would much rather have an offense be in third and three so you can do whatever you want versus third and nine where everyone knows you're going to throw the ball. I mean, that ended up, you know, not being as much of a factor given how good Ellinger looked. But, you know, you can't take away everything. And Rice's strength is stopping the ground game. And for the most part, I think Texas ended up averaging somewhere around like 4.5 a carry with some big plays later in the game. But this defensive front did a really good job containing, you know, County Ingram's a really talented back.
Yeah, no, I think we have more than enough evidence so far, especially with the way they looked earlier in the game before they got worn down. It's going to be really, really hard for CUSA teams to run on Rice. That I think that you've shown it pretty definitively so far in the results they've gotten against all three of these very, very good teams that they played, that the run defense is going to be very, very good. And so I feel really solid about where that is. As far as positives on the offensive side of the ball, a little harder to come by. You know, they had six possessions in the first half and all six of them ended up in punts. And then so were the first two of the second half. On the bright side, no turnovers. So there's that.
Yeah, one turnover in three games. That's impressive.
Wow. Yeah, that is. Yeah, I didn't think about that. They didn't turn it over last week either. So that's good. That's, you know.
Well, it was Wiley's fumble against Wake Forest. That was the lone turnover.
And that's very encouraging because that's, you know, one thing I always want a Rice team to be, and I think you have every expectation that they can be at this level because of the caliber of guys that they recruit and how smart they are, is that they should always be able to play disciplined. And that includes, you know, not turning over the ball and keeping penalties lower. And so one turnover from the offense through three games is a very nice sign for that. Aston Walter and Charlie Booker both averaged 4.3 yards a carry, which is pretty solid. They didn't run the ball a ton, and the sack numbers made the total rushing totals look less impressive. But between Walter and Booker, 22 carries for, 95 yards, which is not stellar, but, you know, against a team with as much talent as Texas, that's pretty solid.
Yeah, and that was kind of it. So, and this is something I asked Blomgren post-game, and I don't know if the coaching staff quite has an answer for it yet, because this is a team that their identity is going to be in running the football and moving people in line of scrimmage. And what does this team do when they can't do that? Because that was the issue they had in the first half, is they were running into the teeth of the defense and not making very much progress in getting themselves into third and long, and then not converting those plays on third and long versus, you know, you take to the air early and you get drops. And so they almost got caught between a rock and a hard place of, you have a receiving core that's good but inconsistent, and a running game that, you know, Texas is doing everything they can to make Rice pass. And so that's the, you know, looking ahead, if there's anything that we need to see against Baylor before we get into conference play, is how does Rice answer that question? And if they can't run the football, you know, we saw them be successful through the air against Wake Forest when Tom came in off the bench. But, you know, that didn't really pick up against Texas until, I guess, the fourth quarter of those last couple of touchdown drives. So the running game, the stats looked all right, but it was kind of weighted heavily towards the end when the game was pretty well in hand.
Yeah. And, you know, they've got put in a really tough situation to have to play a backup quarterback coming into a game like this. And, you know, specifically one where we've talked about all along what led Wiley to winning this battle was his mastery of the offense. And, you know, this was an area where, you know, they just kind of got put in a bind because, you know, when Texas was playing well early on, they couldn't really, you know, they want to run the ball on first down. And, you know, when you're getting to a place where you run the ball on first down and you run the ball on second down, and all of a sudden you're, you're backed up in third and long consistently, that's going to be tough on any quarterback. And so you say, well, okay, let's throw the ball more on first and second down and maybe put ourselves in some more advantageous situations. And I thought they did a little better job of that as the game went on. You know, the score was out of hand at that point, but you know, I think you take what you can, you know, going forward from that. But it's tougher to do that and tougher to mix in, well, okay, they're stopping this. Well, we have this wrinkle that maybe we'll beat that. But, you know, when you've had to pare back the scheme to accommodate the backup, that just makes that all the more difficult. So,
yeah, and it's not like you have, you know, 15 shots to figure it out and get into a rhythm and figure out what you want. Like, you got three downs, and if it doesn't work on three downs, you give it to the other team and you get three or four more shots. And so I think, especially with, and something that Tom Herman said after the game and why Texas took the opening kickoff when they typically are a team that defers, is they didn't want to give Rice the chance to find that success early and keep Texas off the field. They were that nervous about what if this offense can keep going and do what they want to do, that they wanted to try and put Rice in an uncomfortable position to where when Rice got the football, they were already trailing. And so there was already some pressure there to try and force down the field and weren't as able to, you know, kind of stick to their script as they might have liked to.
And then as far as, not a whole lot to take away for the receivers. Nobody beyond Austin Trammell really had a whole lot of opportunities or catches. Congrats to Asen Walter for having two receiving touchdowns, his first two, and now three touchdowns to overall in the last 2 weeks after none in his first 5 years as a college athlete. So definitely,
yeah, I would wager that's
a
rare statistic, right? How many college players have zero touchdowns in their first 5 years and three in the first three games of their sixth year? You will win a trivia question with that one.
Yeah. The bright spot in the receiving game continues to be Austin Trammell, who I think just continues to show why he's the best overall playmaker, I think, on the offense for this team. So he's definitely a guy that's going to, no surprise here, it's things we've said all along, but is going to continue to be a playmaker and the go-to option for them going forward.
Yeah, and Brad Rosner hauled in a 41-yard grab that was pretty good, and August Pete made some good catches, and then he, I couldn't get a good read on it of whether or not the ball was put across the wrong shoulder or a little bit overthrown, but
On that long one,
Stewart chucked one to him. That would have been another 40-50-yard completion that they just were close but not quite able to connect on. So that was, you know, we were wondering the last couple weeks of are there going to be some deep shots? And we saw a couple against Texas, and they were done well. They weren't, I think some of the problems we had with last year, Rice did with those deep shots of putting the ball in a place that was dangerous. And none of the throws, like we talked about that overthrow, like it was either one of the Rice guys was going to catch it or it was going to be an incomplete pass. They were making smart decisions on when to attack downfield. And they connected on a couple of them, which was good.
Yep. Yeah, no, I think the long ball to August Pete was, it looked like he had it took him a while to locate the ball, but I didn't think he like slowed down a bunch in doing so. So I think that one was just a little bit of an overthrow, which, I mean, nobody is totally accurate all the time on those deep passes. So I'm not going to ding Tom much for that. He generally looked good
in general, but Tom was really accurate.
Yeah. Only took a couple of deep shots, but all things considered, looked, I was pretty pleased with the results when they did take those shots.
I think overall, you know, it makes you wonder how much more of the offense would have been opened up if Wiley had been in there and if that would have made any difference, especially early on how Rice was able to move the ball. But I don't come away particularly discouraged about the quarterback position, especially if, you know, we at time of recording, we don't have any updates on Wiley's health status other than he was on the field with the team on Saturday against Texas with pregame stuff, but he was dressed out in street clothes, no helmet, nothing like that. And he's been in the huddle and, you know, same kind of thing, not practicing, but with the team and with the offense and taking those mental reps, if you will, all last week during practice. So Blomgren had said initially that he doesn't think that this is a long-term concern, but wasn't quite ready to definitively say that he would be back against Baylor, but left the door open. So there is a, as of right now, it's probable that Stewart starts the Baylor game, but if Wiley does get cleared to play, then I would expect them to flip back pretty quick and put him back under center.
Yeah, because you definitely saw, you know, they were very sort of predictable in those several first possessions against Texas. It was a lot of run on first down, run on second down, throw on third and long. But the brief action that Wiley got against Wake Forest, you know, on that one long drive before he got hurt, they were definitely willing to throw it around a little on first down to keep ahead of the sticks. So I think once Wiley is back, and or as Tom gets a little more comfortable digesting a little bit more of the playbook, that you'll see a little more willingness to, when things aren't working in the run game, and I think Baylor's going to work pretty hard to keep them from doing so. We'll talk about that more in a little bit, but I think they'll definitely be willing to open the offense up a little bit more based on the situation once going forward, whether Wiley is back or whether it continues to be Tom.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that we have to be a bit patient on that front, because they talk about it on campus, the NFL curriculum and their playbook. I mean, you print it out, it is thick. And so when we talk about, you know, mastery of the offense and understanding things, you know, Tom, of course, needs to get up to speed, but there's, you know, a lot of freshmen, especially receivers, that are working to get up to speed on those spots. You know, Jack Bradley is played in the first couple games at tight end, and they really like what he's shown. But there's, this offense is going to be able to do a lot more things once everybody is on the same page and up to speed. And so we're at the point where we're further along than last year, but we're still not quite clicking on all cylinders yet. And I mean, that's been pretty obvious through the first three games. So let's, again, be patient. And we've seen when they do execute well, good things can happen. We just need to get everybody up on the same page and executing consistently.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, we saw for two drives at the end of the Texas game. Which, I mean, say what you want, the first touchdown drive that Rice had was 12 plays, 73 yards, took 6.5 minutes. The second touchdown drive, 8 plays, 75 yards, 2 minutes, 22 seconds.
Like, yeah, and say what you will about that being Texas's backups, which that's fine, but Texas's backups are still a lot more athletic than the first team defenders on a lot of teams they're going to play this season. So those points are, you know, kind of come after the game was out of hand, but I think you can take a fair amount of that. There is still value in getting those reps and feeling, you know, okay, that's what this is like. That's what this offense is what we want it to be. So I think there's still some value and some optimism to take forward going out of those drives.
Yeah, and some interesting talking with Coach Herman after the game. He made a comment about the 98-yard kickoff return after Rice had scored that last touchdown with a minute to go. And he was kind of saying that, you know, a lot of teams would have said, you know, this game is over. We're up by so many scores. You know, let's just call it in and be done. But he praised his team and deservingly for how everyone did their job and executed and played to the fullest of their abilities up to the final whistle, and that resulted in them having that big kickoff return. And you know, Carter, you mentioned the backup for Texas. Those backups are still trying to earn playing time on the field. Like, it's not like the backups are playing any less hard or care about it less than the starters, because this is their opportunity to get on the field in a college football game and make plays and challenge for more time with the starters. And so those were talented guys who, as evidenced, you know, by that big play at the end of the game, were working really hard to stop this offense. So maybe Rice is not, you know, at the point where they're ready to challenge the starters for Texas head on, fine. But there was enough to see at the fourth quarter that Rice kept working and Texas kept working, and Rice was able to get some points on the board with two long sustained drives.
Yeah, so that was really encouraging to see. As far as the kicking game goes, well, Antonio Montero has never missed a kick in his college career. Woo! So we can proudly say that. Again, I think we're definitely going to be looking forward to when Zach Hoban is healthy again and can provide some competition here. As far as the punting goes, Nunez was a little up and down, had some shorter punts. Chris Barnes only kicked 3 to his 5, maybe looked a little more consistent overall.
Yeah, and I mean, there wasn't
you never want a punter
position
right
that they were punting from, but still managed to get 4 out of the 8 inside the 20. It was a solid night from that group. Not great, not Jack Fox-esque, as we might have thought we were getting spoiled in the first couple of games with that, but for the most part, they got the job done.
Right, and that's, you know, you never want to be punting that many times in a game anyway, so it's kind of up to the rest of the team to not put them in those situations, so.
And then one more quick note on Montero and our, I don't know how many middle linebackers kicked extra points this weekend across college football. I'm going to say it's probably a short list. But I don't think it was on the podcast. I think we put our practice notes up in the forum. Anybody who's a member of the site, you can go ahead and get on those and access those. And I think it was last week in some of our practice notes that we put an update that Montero was, in fact, working with the special teams and alternating with Harrison on extra points. And so he did some kicking in high school, and they were at the point of, I think it was spring ball, when it's kind of like all of the guys who played quarterback in high school, hey, coach, let me have a shot. And Montero mentioned that he could kick. And so they said, sure, why not? And they let him do it. And so after Harrison had a rough start on the first week against Army, Montero took a couple kicks and he looked pretty good. I don't think we're at the point where they're going to start asking him to kick 40 and 50 yarders. I think
probably not.
If we're in that situation, then Harrison and Chris Barnes are probably better options. But kudos to Coach Sabota and Bloomgren for making the decision to put Montero in for that extra point. I'm not going to go into the mental psyche of how to manage kickers that are struggling. But if you have someone that you trust to get the job done, even if it's a lopsided game, it was good to put Montero into a game and let him have that shot. And, you know, maybe they'll need him going forward. We'll see. As far as Hoban, last week at practice, he was taking some light kicks from pretty close up just to kind of, you know, test out, because his injury was to his plant foot. Mm-hmm. I think his ankle, or at least that's where he was wearing a brace. And so he took a couple kicks and has kind of been slowly working his way up from there. And it's just building that strength and that stamina and ability to put enough pressure on it to, you know, pound a long kick and not a chip shot, something like that. So I don't have any sense that, you know, of course, Rice would love to have a trustworthy kicking game, but they're not going to risk his health and try and force him back onto the field when they have it, you know, between Montero and Harrison, somebody who can take extra points. And then, you know, they will figure out an answer whether or not it's going for it a little bit more or trusting one of those other options to kick some longer field goals. So that's still a work in progress, and, you know, fingers crossed that gets cleaned up as quickly as possible.
All right. Any last thoughts on Texas before we wipe the slate clean on that one?
I think we've just about put that one to bed.
All right. Well, we will officially do that and move on to a game that unfortunately doesn't seem like it's going to be a whole lot easier. Baylor comes to town playing at Rice Stadium, I believe. And they're, you know, it's hard to say exactly what they are at this point. They've played Stephen F. Austin, I believe, and UTSA so far, and blew them both out to the tune of what I think 56-17 and 63-14. So
yeah,
not exactly a murderer's row so far. Obviously, UTSA is a conference mate, although, as we noted, did not fare quite as well against Army as Rice did. So if you want to apply some transitive property there, then hopefully that means Rice can be more competitive than they were. Most of the advanced rating systems like FPI and SP Plus and things like that seem to think Baylor's pretty good, sort of in the range of, 25-35 in the country with kind of a top 40 offense-ish and defense. So that's pretty solid. They will, on offense, they really like to run the ball is their thing. They're really a spread to run team. And that's kind of the scheme that Matt Rhule has had going back to when he was at Temple. They mostly operate out of 11 personnel. They won't really do much two back stuff, and they're out of the shotgun. They will do some two tight end stuff. Their passing game, Charlie Brewer is pretty good. He only passed for about 3,000 yards last year, I think, which in the Big 12 is, practically pedestrian type numbers.
Mediocre, but great everywhere else.
Yeah, and ran for about 600. So he's a pretty good runner, too. Most of the passing stuff they do is kind of constraints off the running game. They run a lot of RPOs, a lot of play action. They're not just sort of a straight drop back team very much. So it's definitely going to be a challenge, because of the capability that they've shown so far, and most systems seem to think they're going to be pretty solid on offense. On the flip side, that eagerness to run the ball does, as we said, kind of play into Rice's strength. So I guess I've just sort of led us into talking about the Rice defense first, but it's going to be a challenge. But, this is not like Wake Forest or Texas, where they're going to have a quarterback. Charlie Brewer is good, but this is not going to be like facing Jamie Newman or Sam Ellinger, where you're going to have a guy throwing pinpoint passes downfield to 6'5", 6'6", 220-pound wide receivers.
Yeah, I think so. Charlie Brewer is at this point a fairly experienced Big 12 quarterback who's probably, there were moments where we thought he would take over and push himself in that upper echelon of passers, and he hasn't quite done it, but he's still pretty good, above average, and was actually in some conversations with folks around Rice, the starting talent that he has to work with from a skill position standpoint is as good, if not better, than what Texas has. Baylor's not as deep as Texas, but if you're just looking at wideouts, you have two guys that are going to give Rice a lot of issues through the air. Denzel Mims and RJ Sneed, both experienced guys who have had good years so far. And you talk about that size and speed combo.
I think Mims had three touchdowns against UTSA. He is big too.
Yeah, so he's 6'3", 215, and can run like the wind. And
can we just get some wide receivers that are like 6'1", like just for a little bit? Like
Sneed is 6'1", 200.
Okay, little more manageable there.
Big and fast. So Texas ended up, I don't know if Colin Johnson was hurt or nicked up a little bit. He wasn't really in the picture. Duvernay got involved, and it was a lot of Texas's younger guys. So Rice didn't even really see the best of the, which is kind of scary, the best of the Texas receiving core. Mims and Sneed are going to be a problem. Thankfully, it's Charlie Brewer throwing to them, who's a good quarterback, and not Ellinger, who was phenomenal.
Right, yeah. So there are definitely still matchup problems here. I think it's something that's a little easier on the Rice offense, like I said, because the overall quality of the quarterback to receiver battery is not what it was for Wake Forest and Texas. And just from a scheme standpoint, they are not going to be as passing focused as those two teams were. They really do want to run the ball. I think now part of this is because they were up big, but Brewer only threw like 16 passes against UTSA. So they're not going to be chucking the ball downfield all the time. This is definitely going to be Rice's DBs aren't going to be tested as often, perhaps, as they were against.
But I think it will be a bit more if we saw it. If we're talking about, you know, ratios and how balanced they are one way or another, Baylor's is going to be pretty balanced, but they will run to set up the pass, and they are a run heavy team, but there's going to be some looks and some play action things, and they're going to take their shots versus, you know, maybe Wake Forest was ready and willing to just go attack through the air as much as they could. Like, yeah, Baylor's going to start on the ground and that's going to be their bread and butter, but they know just as well as we do the mismatches that they're going to have on the outsides. So Baylor is going to scatter that in and try and keep Rice off of balance when they are trying to stack the box and put Brewer into those situations.
Yeah. So it's probably going to be another long day for Rice on defense. That's just kind of the reality of the schedule they've been handed thus far. Maybe in the future, I would hope for Rice to, you know, I don't know how much of this is dictated by when the way CUSA does the scheduling, that they tend to mostly have conference games on the back end, and then a lot of teams get their non-conference pretty much totally out of the way first. But, you know, maybe let's have in the future some of these games, like last year they played LSU in November. So maybe let's have one of these non-conference games in November so that we're not facing this kind of murderer's row schedule to start out. But, you know, that's just the hand you've been dealt so far. There's nothing you can really do about it at this point. But
yeah, I mean, I would say live and learn, but that is part of the reality of where Rice is on the pecking order and in scheduling non-conference games and Conference USA as a whole, really.
Right.
So. Yeah. The Baylor offense is going to be scary and make that those long September weekends maybe a little bit longer. But I think Rice is going to have a bit more success when they have the ball. The Baylor defense stacked up with the Texas defense is a pretty stark difference.
Right. Not nearly the same level of athleticism on that side of the ball. I was looking at some of their tape. They run kind of a base 3-3-5 defense. They're usually in a three down front. They run a lot of tight front stuff, which is the thing where it's kind of like the front in a 3-4, except that you move the defensive ends to just inside of the offensive tackles in what's called a 4-eye technique. And that's really kind of focused on stopping the run so that you can, you know, have more guys in space to stop spread passing attacks. So I think there are going to be, you know, there are going to be some opportunities for Rice if Baylor is loading the box to stop the run, as basically all teams will against Rice until they, you know, prove they can do a little more on the outside. So I think there will be some one-on-ones. You know, Rice's wide receivers have shown, particularly Austin Trammell and at times Rosner and Pete as well, that they can take those matchups on the outside and win their way open. So I think there's going to be some opportunity there.
Yeah, and this is the part of the schedule where, you know, Baylor has two games in, so how much do you read off of what they've done this year versus where they were last year to kind of get your gauge of how good they are? But last year, Baylor was the only team in the Big 12 that allowed more than 5 yards a carry on defense, 5.4, which put them last by almost half a yard to Kansas State. And it got to the point of, if you watched any of Baylor football last year, teams would just run the ball on them at will, and they didn't really have to throw the ball through the air. And so Baylor's passing defense kind of looked all right because they were just kind of hanging around while teams were able to run it at will. And that's something, you know, we looked at the strategy and what Rice has wanted to do this year and tried to do against Texas. If Rice can run the ball effectively against Baylor, then all of a sudden we get a very different looking game script and that kind of, you know, we're talking about matchups to watch if that front versus Rice's offensive line and what they're able to do is going to be much more telling to whether or not we're going to see a game that's akin to the Army game where Rice is slowing things down and keeping things close, or if things are going to get off script and make whoever the quarterback is in the offense kind of have to adjust on the fly like they did against Texas, which didn't work out so well. But I think Rice is going to be able to move the ball on the ground, and that is kind of the key to having any sort of offensive attack that is reliable so far.
Right. They need to, like, it, as long as they can, you know, the complexion of any game for them on offense changes so much if they can do what they want to do on first down and, you know, get 4, 5, 6 yard runs and stay ahead of the chains. So it's going to be important for them to not get into situations like they were against Texas where they just, you know, they couldn't get a lot going on first and second down and ended up in these third and longs. But, you know, hopefully, regardless of who it is at quarterback, hopefully whether, you know, whether it's Wiley and they can open things back up again, or whether Tom is ready to take on a little bit more, you know, just to be able to put a little more variety on first and second down, not even in terms of running and passing, but just in terms of, because, you know, they do so many different things. Like it's, you know, we keep hitting on the complexity, but really if you just, you know, you turn on the tape and look at it, there are very few teams in the country that do as many different things just in the run game as they do, from, you know, these I formation power runs to, you know, they do two back stuff and these spread option runs. They're capable of so many different things on offense, and just being able to have that variety in there, if they can do a little bit more with that this week, opens up a lot more things for you and lets you keep defenses guessing and keep them off guard, which is really the number one thing you want to do on offense 90% of the time is keep the defense guessing and you know, not let them just line up and play ball.
Yeah, absolutely. And when they do decide to take those shots downfield, which we saw a little bit about Texas, you know, Baylor is a team that gives up touchdowns. Their secondary was so-so. We mentioned that last year, and they gave up 25 touchdown passes and didn't take the ball away very often. Seven picks across their 13 games. So this is looking to be something where, like you said, Carter, if Rice can dictate early what they want to do, that it should play out in a much more positive game script for Rice.
Right. And, you know, it's definitely not going to be an easy one. You know, like I've said, the most, just based on what little they've put on so far and preseason predictions, most systems seem to think that this is a pretty good kind of a top 25 to top 30 caliber team. But I think in terms of the matchup, there are some positives for Rice. You know, if they can force third and longs against this defense, which, you know, they've managed to do that against teams like Wake Forest and Texas, so I think there's every reason to think they can do it against Baylor as well. They can put you in third and longs. You know, you're not facing quite as fearsome of a passing game as you have the last 2 weeks, so hopefully you can get off the field a little bit more. And if you can do that, you can keep the ball with your offense. And if they can be more effective on first and second down to stay ahead of the sticks, then you can force the game to go the way Rice wants it to go. You know, like kind of like watching a college basketball game where you have one team that wants to run wide open and run up and down the floor and shoot a lot of threes and layups and stuff like that, and one team that really wants to take everything slowly and run down the shot clock. Well, that's what Rice wants to do, and I think just based on the matchups here, there's going to be some opportunities to force things to go that way and to play the kind of game that Rice wants to play. And, you know, like we saw against Army, if you can force a team to play that kind of game with you, you can stay in it. So,
and I think something worth, I don't really think we hit on when we talked about Texas and your mention getting teams into third and long. Rice is probably a good mix, but I wouldn't say that they blitz terribly much. At least bringing in more than one or two guy, one guy off the edge. It's usually, you know, trusting the defensive line and maybe a linebacker, or, you know, maybe Treshawn Chamberlain, something like that. Rice brought a lot of pressure against Texas, particularly on third down, and that offensive line, you know, credit to them, held up extremely well. I think it was the second touchdown pass that Ellinger threw. It was the long 50-yard bomb. I counted six Rice defenders in a circle being blocked by the five Texas offensive linemen and the running back just absolutely perfectly. And that pressure couldn't get to him, and Ellinger made him pay. I think that's something where we'll want to pay attention to against Baylor, because the Baylor offensive line is not as heralded as the Texas offensive line. And if Rice is going to bring some pressure, I think they're going to have a better chance of hurrying Brewer. Or on the other hand, if they do ease up and drop, you know, 7-8 into coverage, those tighter windows should be more sufficient against a passer that is, you know, good, not great. And so those are things where I think when we saw the defensive game plan initially against Texas, it was working pretty well. It was doing what it was supposed to do. Texas just out-athleted Rice, which Baylor still has really good athletes and a lot of athleticism and speed, but not quite to the same degree as Texas. So there should be more flaws. So I don't think you're going to see the Rice defensive game plan, you know, alter drastically based on what happened last week, but I think you should see more positive results. And you're certainly not going to see someone who's going to complete, what did Ellinger complete, like 80% of his passes or something like that. Like, Brewer is good, but he's more of a 65-ish percent career completion guy.
Yeah, so it'll just be one of those situations where, you know, we've hit on this again and again, but there have been tons of situations this year where the Rice DBs have been in position, you know, to make a play down the field, and it's just been sort of a perfect throw, perfect catch type combination. I don't think you're going to see that as much this game because Brewer is just not as good of a thrower as Jamie Newman or Sam Ellinger. And so you know, there have been those situations that have come that way for Rice this year, and the results have been bad, but this is a situation where you can play exactly as well, and hopefully they will, and the result comes out more positive for you because the opposing players just aren't, you know, quite the same caliber as who you faced so far. So, you know,
yeah, again, so it's not necessarily that the process is broken. It just is, you know, as with anything, that there's only so efficient that you can be with that talent differential. And so, I mean, if you're Rice, what do you scrap everything and try and get, you know, your Rude Goldberg machine of perfectly connecting all of these things that aren't your strengths to try and hopefully engineer an upset? Or do you do what you do well as best as you can and, you know, let the chips lie?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think there's any kind of, like, you know, something is going wrong with the scheme here. Like, we're not playing the right defense, we're not calling the right plays, anything like that. I think the coaches have put the players in positions to succeed thus far, and the players have executed to a pretty satisfactory level, I would say, which, you know, all things considered with where they are and how long they've been in this system, I think you can be really satisfied with the way they've executed the concepts they've been given so far. And so there's no, you know, there are some teams out there that are 1-2 or 0-3 that are going like, fire everybody. What's going on here? Why is this a disaster? Rice is not in that situation. We're just going to keep preaching patience here, because if they keep doing the things that they've been doing, the results are going to come. It's just going to take a little longer.
Yeah, and I think it's worth noting that it's one thing if everyone within the program has to say these things, because that's their livelihood. But opposing coaches and other teams have no motivation to, you know, start talking up the Owls or anything like that other than what they're seeing. And so I thought it was pretty telling after the game. Tom Herman, unprovoked, said that the scheme and the complexity of the Rice defense and the secondary was, he said, it was as mentally challenging of a game for our quarterback as we've seen in 3 years. Now, granted, Ellinger was as close to perfect as you could be. He executed perfectly, but, you know, Herman and Dave Aranda and the guys at LSU and, folks at CUSA Media Days, like across the board, people talk about how challenging it is to prepare and scheme for Rice. And everyone outside of the program can see what I think maybe the common fan doesn't pay as much attention to, or is it's not as easy for us sitting on our couch to grasp. You know, when we see a 50-yard touchdown, it's a 50-yard touchdown. But it's not all 50-yard touchdowns are created equal. And the folks at Texas and around the conference have had overwhelmingly positive things to say about the challenges of preparing for Rice. And so if everybody else is kind of nervous and saying those positive things about you and treating you as much of a challenge to prepare for as a triple option and a service academy kind of team, that we're going to choose to believe, you know, the people who know football a lot better than I do and you do, Carter, that, you know, something is going on at South Main that a lot of people seem to think is headed in the right direction.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's, you know, there are teams out there that, you know, there are different ways to approach philosophy about your schemes. And there are a lot of teams out there that choose to do just sort of the simplest thing possible with the idea that, you know, you practice and over and over again, and the players know exactly what they're supposed to do. And so they can just play freely. And there's a lot of value in that. That is not what Rice does. We keep hitting on this, but these schemes are seriously complex, and they give a lot of headaches for opposing teams to prepare for. And, you know, Rice may not be in a position right now where, in terms of, you know, where they are in recruiting and roster construction and the comfort and experience of the guys that they have now to execute those on a level that's going to lead them to hang with Texas or beat a team like Wake Forest. But that day is coming sooner than you realize. And even this season, they're rapidly approaching just one more non-conference game, but they're rapidly approaching teams that will not have the same advantages against them that teams like Wake Forest and Army and Texas and Baylor do. So
and talking with and this coaching staff, and I think there's, so the biggest, you know, mental hurdle I think folks have is this ground and pound old school traditional style football going to work at Rice? Is this process that we keep talking about worth trying? And I think it's worth noting that Blumgren ran a Stanford offense for 5 years that produced incredible talents and moved the ball extremely well and was highly regarded on the staff with David Shaw that had stuck together for a long time. And Blumgren didn't have to come to Rice. I think this is worth mentioning in kind of an aside, you know, as we've kind of stepped away from game debrief and previewing that Blumgren, if you've talked with him or had any sort of relationship with him, he's a smart dude that understands what he's doing. And he would have not shown up at Rice if he didn't know that he was going to have the support and the time and the buy-in from the administration to do this. And so that's not a guarantee that, you know, this is going to work because he wants it to work, but he has had other offers, I'm sure, and could have handpicked where he wanted to go, but he chose Rice and he brought in a very good staff of coaches, which had NFL offers to go back to the NFL last season after Rice won 2 games, but chose to stay at South Main and work with these kids. So I know that saying patience is only going to work for so long, but the administration and the athletic department is behind Blumgren for the long haul. And I think it's because he knows that he's willing to take the time to build slowly and methodically and he's not going to rush and, you know, try and cut corners so that the score of a Texas game can be 48-28 instead of 48-13. So I think that keeping that in mind and the direction and the well thought outness, if that's a word, of this plan is going, you know, on schedule, if not ahead of schedule.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, patience is not a common virtue in terms of results in college football these days. And particularly, you're now in the situation where, since they've instituted the early signing period, I think a lot of people don't realize how much that has kind of hamstrung new coaches coming into jobs because of the way the timetable works. You know, and Blomgren's a perfect example here. You know, he was hired in what, the first week of December in 2017, and then has to try to sign a class 3 weeks later. And you can say, well, yeah, you have the late signing period, but I think something like last year, I think something like 90% of Division I players or of FBS players signed in the early signing period. So that just reinforces that I think everywhere needs to have with new coaches a little more patience than we're willing to have right now. And given the way things have gone over the years, hopefully a Rice fan base is a little more willing to be patient and let this go where it's going to go than a lot of other fan bases would be. But
and you mentioned the recruiting piece, so that the guys that are making plays and stepping up are, for the most part, young guys that Blomgren has brought in and recruited. Like, if you looked at what Blaze Aldridge was able to do against Texas, like, was playing with his hair on fire and played extremely well, and, you know, across the board. And we haven't touched as much on the podcast. We'll probably have some more recruiting notes. There's some good news coming on that front. But the players that Rice is bringing in, like, what does Rice really need right now on offense? Probably some pass catchers and some weapons to complement Austin Trammell. Andrew Mason is a receiver out of Tennessee. Rice commit, had 8 touchdowns last week.
Broke a Tennessee State record.
In one game. He had five touchdowns and like 260 yards at halftime.
And that was it. And this was not Little Sisters of the Poor he was playing. I'm pretty sure the opponent was Pulaski Academy in Arkansas, which, if that name rings a bell, it's their fame for their coach has a philosophy where he basically never punts. They almost never kick at all. And in the something like 10 plus years he's been on the job, they've turned that philosophy into several state championships. So this was not, you know, playing some tiny high school in the middle of nowhere. They can barely field a team. This was pretty intense competition, and Mason put up 8 touchdowns.
Yeah, unreal. And I mean, you go across the board, like Rice has signed, like, or not signed yet, but a lot of the commits and folks who have been on board for a while, like, I think we've retweeted last week or something like that. Like, go watch Sean Fresh and Rice's top corner recruit and what he can do with the ball in his hands, like uber freakishly athletic, and Kalon Griffin, and just the list goes on and on and on of like really, really, really talented guys that are some of the best, better recruits, at least, that have been committed to Rice and sometimes. So again, if you keep adding the kind of players that are already executing this scheme at a high level and keep increasing the talent portfolio, these are things to get excited about. So there should be some more good news on the recruiting front coming up in the next couple weeks. And, you know, as the on-field product gets better, these recruits, and I've talked with several of them, that they know that they buy into what the team has bought into, and no one is committed to Rice right now because they're expecting the Owls to go undefeated in non-conference play. They have seen the positive steps that, you know, we keep, you know, coming back to, and believe that, you know, by the time they get to campus, they're going to be the pieces that help push things over the edge. So a lot of good news coming on that front, and a lot of guys that are just fun to watch on the highlight reel and will be really exciting once we actually get them to South Main.
Yeah, I think Rice is in a really good spot for recruiting right now because they're like because of the way the timetable that they're on and the patience that the administration is willing to have, they're in a place where they can sell. There are kind of two ways to approach recruiting, depending on where you are as a staff and a team. You can kind of sell the promise or you can sell the results. And Rice is in a place where they can sell the promise right now, and you can have a lot of success doing it. There are a lot of staffs that have done a really good job recruiting that way. And I think relative to the historical level that Rice has recruited at, you're seeing those results in recruiting work very well for this staff. And so as they continue to build and continue to recruit that way, I think they're putting themselves in a really good position to where when they've been there long enough that you kind of have to start recruiting on the results, I think the results are going to be there for them to show.
Yeah. And again, it's the middle of September. We have a lot of football left to be played, and we haven't even gotten into conference play yet. So there is still plenty of opportunity for those results on the field to start materializing this year. A couple non-conference losses do not prohibit or doom Rice to a forgettable season. We have plenty of games to play in front of us, and let's see how Baylor goes. And then we will jump into Conference USA play, and then I guess the real measuring sticks will come.
All right. Well, that discussion was unplanned, but I think I think that was a really good overview of where we are. I feel good about the things we said there and the way that we can talk about this and sell this program right now. So any last thoughts for the week?
I think that was good. We will get a 6 o'clock kick, another evening kick at home, actually at Rice Stadium this week against Baylor before the weather hopefully cools down to reasonable weathers and weather cools down to reasonable weathers. Man, that was a long game. My words are telling me it's time to wrap it up. But
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, lots of good things, and we'll take it one game at a time, just like the team.
All right. Well, we'll see y'all next week to break down the Baylor game and preview finally the start of Conference USA play. So come back next week. Thanks so much for listening, and Rice Fight.
This show was edited and produced by Carter Spires. It features music from Joseph McDade.